All right, let's get it rolling. Hey, everybody, it's the Checkers of Records show on Speedway Anywhere, your Speedway podcast for everything motorsports and even some multi-sports. blogtalkradio.com/Speedway Anywhere. Feel free to join the show. Call in at 917-889-2053. Hey, me and my co-host from my fan from the stands, my buddy in the bleachers, Kurt, we've been throwing it around. It's kind of funny when you look at the final number of that 2053. It spells bold if you use the number zero instead of the letter zero. Or what's the other one? Coke is in the brand of the pop, C-O-K-E, with the O being the zero. So yeah, 917-989-2053, however it works out. Anyways, we're live every Monday and Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Time. I'm your crew chief Q. Our fan from the stands, our captain in the bleachers, Kurt, will be joining us as well. And I have a special guest in store tonight, too. We'll get to him within the less than next half an hour. All I can say about NASCAR races at Martinsville is they did not disappoint. Sure, we had less beating and banging than usual, but in the end, it was the final bang that will be talked about till Miami, if not after. More on that when we get to the Cup and truck news. But Xfinity Series had the weekend off, and HRA returned for their second to last of 2018 over the weekend at the Vegas drag strip, the Vegas Strip. A little bit of news for 2019 after it was announced that Lowe's would be leaving the number 48 team of Jimmy Johnson. It was finally announced that Ally Financial will be his primary sponsor when they join the Hendrick team of Johnson. There was some speculation that Red Bull was interested in being the sponsor, but I would more than guess that Monster Energy as the title sponsor had some say in that competing brand of Red Bull rejoining the Cup Series. Yes, I said rejoining, because obviously Red Bull has been prominent and you want to call that every sport, any sport, all above, you know. But yeah, they weren't able to ink the deal with Johnson. Y'all might remember Nextel and Sprint had a clause that kept any new telecommunication brands from sponsoring a team. And this was before we were all walking around with smartphones. We still had flip phones at that point. We had the cool little, you know, grab the button on the side of the phone type deal with Nextel, Sprint. But yeah, that was at the height of the phone biz really taking off. And it kept many sponsors out when teams needed them. And the you know, call it Verizon, call it AT&T, call it AirTouch, call it, you know, all the above. They weren't able to put their name on the side of a car and make a go of a marketing campaign on the side of a Cup car, although they could in the Busch Series / Nationwide Series / who are they now? Xfinity. I lose track. But, you know, back when it was known as the Winston Cup Series, I remember cool green cigarettes being on the side of a car until they quashed that as well. You know, you had Jimmy Spencer with Winston, and you had Jimmy Spencer with Camel. But that was the Winston Cup Series. It's a whole new game now. It really is. You know, that non-compete clause amongst title brands, whether they are whether they're a race sponsor, now that makes a difference. But when they are the title sponsor of the series, obviously Monster Energy does have some say so in whether or not that could have ended up on the side of Jimmy Johnson's car. We have a few champions crowned, by the way, both in the ongoing NHRA season. More on that in a little bit. But, yeah, top feeler Steve Torrence has clinched it. There's still some scenarios that other drivers could move into that first position. Highly unlikely. And we'll bring that up in NHRA news. The ARCA series finished up the season leading into Kansas as a support race, where Sheldon Creed won that Friday, and all he had to do was start the race. So, and we'll get to that too in more specifics. World of Outlaws is going to sew it up next weekend, and the three premier NASCAR series are all set with no more confusion on who's got one more race in the chase, who's got two more races in the chase, who's starting the next round of their three race chase. All are set going into Texas. Now we will be able to sort it out a little better as the next couple weeks go on, as far as where each premier series of NASCAR are at before going to Miami. Couple sold their place as of now. John Hunter Nemechek won at Kansas, which was the first of the three. Obviously, he's not the when you're in scenario, and Daniel Hemric missed it by an inch and then got his penalties. More on that in a second, too. I keep on saying more on that in a second, but it's just, you know, I want to be all inclusive here. So they'll all be set for two races to go in their respective rounds as they go to Texas, as they go to Phoenix or ISM Speedway. Before Miami. So let's go green and let's get to the Cup Series.
Green flag, hammer down.
So in the Cup Series, the big news is that final bump and run that Joey Logano made on Martin Truex Jr. after Truex gained the lead. Logano did it on the final lap, and both had been battling that lead for most of the race. You saw a lot of Truex and Hamlin, and Joey Logano pretty much dominated it. But Truex made that final move to wear down Logano, and the only thing that Logano had left was his bumper. And you know, going throughout that race, what really bothers me, I don't think that his teammate, Brad Keselowski, raced him as hard as he should have. It was at that point that, you know, I think that Brad Keselowski realized that here came Martin Truex making his way up, and he was like, oh, I better protect my teammate. And it was, you know, I'm sure there's some team orders there, but I don't know. And matter of fact, I want to welcome my guest because I'm sure he's got some interesting views on team orders and as well as other things. Not quite sure what to call you. Are you Jay? Are you your formal name? Are you?
Well, it all depends on where I am and what I'm doing there, Quentin. Normally I go by Jay, but Big Mouth of the Mid-South if I'm doing my street stock thing on the dirt tracks, you know, so it all depends.
So do I call you Jay? Do I call you Mike? Do I call you, hey, buddy, you can call me Alan, the old Chevy Chase, you know, Paul Simon video, whatever.
MJ, whatever. It all works. Like I said, I normally answer to a lot of different things.
Well, so do I sometimes, even when people aren't looking for me. What's your views on that Brad Keselowski Logano thing? Is he's, you know, all of a sudden Keselowski opens up the room when he realizes that Joey's got to go.
I don't believe I have yet to see in NASCAR. Well, I take that back. We saw it one time with Michael Waltrip, and we saw what that cost them. But I don't think in NASCAR there ever are team rules. You know, the owner says, hey, I don't want to see both cars wrecked, but, you know, you got to race for your team. Your team is your team, and that's who you're racing for.
Sorry, you caught me taking a sip of Gatorade there. It's so funny, too, when you mentioned the, what was that, 2013, when they created a 13th spot for Jeff Gordon to move into that.
I'd have to look up the year of that. But yeah, it involved Clint Bowyer. At that time, Martin Truex was involved in that, not by of his doing, but it was supposedly for his benefit.
And there was the number 36 car. I'm not sure who was driving it at the time, actually backed up in the field to allow I believe it was Truex to gain a spot. Yeah, that was
Right. There was some promise, and I think that came from I don't remember if that was involved in that same situation, because that involved actually Penske. I thought, if I recall correctly, I'm trying to think back in my memory here now, but I think that might have been a different race, different situation where. I want to say it was Front Row Motorsports was offered a team Penske motor if they backed up to let somebody else move up that position and get those points.
You know, if that was the situation, I'm not sure. Maybe that was – I just remember the driver of that number 36 saying that, okay, well, they owe me big, or they, you know, something to that effect. Yeah, that was
And I know NASCAR frowned on that too, but, you know, it's something that's really tough to police like that, you know. And I was just talking to, I think it was my mom I was talking to about, there's things, if it's within the rules, you know, maybe you don't like, but if it's legal and offering somebody a motor isn't illegal, you know. But the situation I go back to, and I think this was in 97 or 98. Jeff Gordon, in order to win the championship, all he had to do was not finish last. And Hendrick Motorsports brought another car that year, and Jack Sprague started the race on lap one, pulled in and sat in the garage for 5 to 10 laps, and then came back out on the track. And if Gordon had a problem, all he had to do was pull back in to protect that spot. I don't know if you'd remember that, Quentin, but I was a Jeff Gordon fan, and I did not like that. I mean, to me, that's extremely weak. But it was within the rules, and they were protecting him winning the championship.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that 97-98. And I remember the finale at Atlanta in 97, too, where it was one of those where Darrell Waltrip was on the cusp of not qualifying for his second race he wouldn't have qualified for in the first time in his career. And, you know, it was down to Jeff Gordon. Mark Martin, Jeff Gordon, and, Dale Jarrett. And Jeff Gordon had wrecked one primary car, and they actually had to go and get a show car from a local dealership that they brought in on a flatbed and all that. And I'm not sure if this is the same year that we're talking about, but oh my God, Ed, that brings back some memories.
Yeah, this is one of those, and I don't know why the discussion is so big this time around. You know, maybe because it is Martin Truex, and you know, he is a heck of a nice guy. A lot of the talk I hear though really bothers me, because they said in those laps, Truex passed him clean and never touched him. If you go back and watch the replay, he touched him. It just didn't turn him enough to get under him, you know. And I got to be careful. I'm going to have another show here to do and have the same discussion. But, and I've been listening to NASCAR America and a NASCAR Race Hub today. You know, it's about 50-50. But I think a lot of whether or not this is being considered wrong is about who it involves. You know, if it had been Joey Logano and Kyle Busch, nobody would have cared either way. You know, it goes back to Mark Martin and Joey Logano. When Joey did it to Mark Martin, you know, then it was wrong. But if Earnhardt did it, he was a fan favorite, it was okay. You know, it became his style and technique, and it became a legend as part of it. So
I'm right there with you. I am. I mean, dirty driving all depends upon who's doing it. And, you know, door-to-door, as far as Truex, yeah, he got into the 22, but bumper-to-bumper, it was, to me, it was clearly, you know, Logano was going to just do it. And some guys get the honors for that, and some guys get the shame from that.
But did he turn him where Truex couldn't drive the car? And I go back to last year's Martinsville race, same race in the playoffs, when Hamlin hit Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott had no chance or opportunity to save that car. His rear end was up off the ground. Okay? Truex could have saved his car. I'm not saying he would have won, but had he straightened it out and not hammered on the gas the way he was, he might not have spun it and been able to drag race Joey down the front stretch. You know, Joey gave him a bump, but he didn't dump him.
Yeah, and, you know, we can go back to the smoke that was coming off of Truex's car. It was enough to upset it to that point that, you know, wheels were spinning, tires were burning, you know. But, yeah, I don't know. It to me, if, like you said, if Earnhardt did it, he'd be a hero. C'est la vie. So, hey, I want to, before I go any further into the Cup Series, actually, I want to finish this up and then go into it with you. So, in the end, Truex got a shove, and he's probably going to return that love, don't you think?
You know, it'll all depend, first off, whether or not he gets to Miami, which I think he will. I think he's in a good enough points position. The next two tracks he's very solid at, could possibly win. So I think if he goes into Miami with his own chance to win the championship, it is going to make a huge difference in that. Now, if he gets knocked out in these next two races and has no chance of winning the championship, I feel sorry for Joey Logano.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that could get interesting. But, yeah, I think the favor will get returned at Miami. I don't think it will get returned before Miami, you know, if Truex ain't a part of it. Logano obviously has the win. You're in spot at Miami. It's going to be a blast watching Truex and Logano anytime they get near each other. But yeah, when the smoke settled down, it was a win to Logano, second to Denny Hamlin, third to Martin Truex Jr. I didn't realize that, by the way, until I looked back at the scoreboard. I thought Truex took second, but whatever.
No, I saw another car coming there at the end, and I really thought it was Brad Keselowski. Brad apparently dropped back to fifth, I believe. I really thought it was Brad coming on the inside there as they came to the start-finish line after all that.
Well, it was two dark-colored cars, and, you know, all of a sudden you see smoke coming off of one, and you're like, good, are they wrecking? Are they still in the pedal? What's going on, you know? So, yeah, to see that go, you know, second to Denny Hamlin, and I'm happy for Hamlin at that rate, too, because, you know, it's one of his two home tracks. Truex to third, Kyle Busch in fourth, Brad Keselowski. You know what's crazy to me? And I'm just skimming my notes now, is that you got four guys in the chase at Stewart. Closest one was Kurt Busch.
Well, and yeah, Kurt and Clint Boyer both, neither one really had the day. I know Almirola was excited about that track, said that he felt that was his best chance to win. I felt kind of amazed by that kind of statement because he's never been in great contention at Martinsville. I know this year, obviously, in the Stewart Haas car, he set a lot of new personal records as far as finishes at races, obviously being in better equipment. So, but I expected Clint to do better, and Kurt was there. And I know Sharon and I have talked about this a little bit. Kevin, I don't want to say he's sandbagging, but he knows he's got points he can lean back on. He doesn't have to be up there involved in all that happened for that reason. So I don't know that you can say he's not driving as hard as he should be, but he obviously, I think, maybe could have finished a little bit better. I think he ended up 10. So like I said, I don't think he's totally laying down, but I also think he's smart enough to know that if they're going to bump and bang, you know, up front like that, he didn't want to be a part of it.
Well, and look at the fact that Kevin Harvick is fourth. You know, if they were to go to Miami today, based on those points, and, you know, you look at, it's still the Kyle Martin, Kevin show with Joey Logano with the lock. I mean, this could change pretty quickly, but with the playoff points and stage wins and all that, Kurt Busch is being the top of the Stewart Haas camp, he's still back there fifth looking in, you know, behind his teammate Kevin Harvick. But do you think that now at this point, well, it's obvious that there's only three more spots. This whole big phenomena that Stewart Haas Racing just might be the four drivers in Miami. Well, now it's down to three. I bet you at best there's maybe two, but I'm thinking one.
Yeah, at this point, I'm with you. I'm thinking one. Harvick should get in. Truthfully, at this point, even now already, only one race in. You look at that points gap from fourth to fifth is 25 points. Again, that's where Harvick's at, and then Kurt Busch. I don't see that changing unless one of those bottom four happens to win, and that would be Kurt Busch, Clint Boyer, Eric Almirola, or Chase Elliott. Now, of those, to me, with the two tracks coming, the way the year's gone, I think it's either Chase Elliott or Kurt Busch that maybe have that opportunity. Eric Almirola, again, he could be a surprise factor because, again, this is his first year in that good equipment of Stewart Haas. So it's kind of tough to tell by his track record at these tracks. I think Texas, if we see them up front, all four Stewart Haas cars up front, you know, it could be Almirola that comes away with the Texas win, in my opinion.
You know, that is kind of what I would be, oh boy. You know, Almirola has only won on restrictor tracks. And as far as the number 10 team has come this year, he needs another season under his belt in that car. But, and this is something that I paragraphed earlier. I put, now, no matter where Amarola ends up, he is easily the most improved 2018. I don't care. You got three races to go. Hands down, he gets the award, and his team as well. I'm not trying to smear Danica Patrick's name, but Amarola and that number 10 team found some chemistry in that Stuart Haas team. And they're going to continue to make some gain in 2019.
Oh, no doubt. And that's why I said it's really tough to look at previous starts and races. One thing I will say, though, if you look throughout the year, I know that his win, and, you know, again, he was in contention at Daytona at the 500 for that win. But he had a couple other races that he lost, I believe. Dover was one of them. You know, a caution come out. He was leading that one.
Yep.
So I think his finishes maybe don't really show, though, how strong he was on the mile and a half as well as a couple of these other miles. I think Bristol is another one where I think it might have been a pit stop or something else of his own team's doing that cost him. But like I said, he was up there and contending in those races where we wouldn't have expected him. Now, the finish, again, he didn't get the top five per se to really identify him as good on that track. But you got to look at the race as a whole of where he ran most of the day.
Circumstance sucks, don't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that with a few others too, and I'm just like, oh my God. And let's be honest, Harvick has beat himself up on pit road. His crew has beat him up on pit road. And it's amazing that he is the fourth guy. You know,
playoffs, yeah.
Yeah, if it wasn't for previous performance, he would be in the what if category.
But the question is he racing the way he is right now because he knows that's where he's sitting? You know, if he'd have come into this round on the bubble or whatnot, would he be racing differently than in these races?
Good point. I mean, you always wonder when they're experimenting and if they're just leaving the best equipment at home, you know, and... But based on qualifying, when you see the Stuart Haas teams right up front, I don't think they're bringing junk.
No, and like I said, and this is purely my perspective on the situation, like I said, just for example there, if he'd have been up in the top three or four in that final laps, you know, he runs a high risk of possibly getting wrecked out in that then. And then he loses that advantage of the point. So like I said, I think he, you know, ran hard, but maybe not as hard of it as he would have had he not had the points in the bank. You know, he doesn't have to necessarily get up there and be in that high risk, mix it up, go for the win if he doesn't have to be. You know, now had the opportunity to come where he was, say, in the top three or four, and it was kind of settling in that way, I think you would have seen him run hard, but... And like I said, I don't know that. I mean, maybe that 10th place car is the best they had. I don't know that. But I do think, like I said, that he is aware that he has points in the bank and doesn't want to risk losing that advantage going into Texas or Phoenix.
Now, here's something that I wanted to bring up, too, is that when you look at Harvick, just Harvick, how many – first place in the stages has he taken just to fall to 10th place in the finish? I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I do know that he has shined through the first third of a race and faltered. And I think now it's time to win. And he probably will.
You know, we thought that he hasn't been as strong as Phoenix as he had been in the past, the last couple of years. And with the track swapping over, I mean, that's going to be unique for everybody with that dog leg now being the front straightaway, which means you could go 18 wide, I think, coming down to the start-finish line now. But you do have a point of something there that's very interesting, like you said, of Harvick does seem to have that dominant car in the first couple of stages and then have faltered. Even though he's got those 7 wins throughout the year, you saw that more often than not, that, yeah, he was strong in the beginning, and then whether it be a pit road miscue or something, or just the car falling off, whereas it's the exact opposite of what he used to be. I mean, that's why he got the nickname the closer, was it was the other way around, is he would be qualified 20th or so, and by the end of the race, all of a sudden be there battling for that win. So, yeah, it might be something that's a little off that this year he just seems to go in the other way, like you said.
You know, that's an interesting point, too, and you bring it up how, you know, Jeff Gordon was like that for a long time, too, where he would just teeter in that 10th spot, teeter in that 8th spot, teeter in that 11th spot, and then all of a sudden, bam, come up to the front. And that's the way that Harvick was for the longest time. And now he's dominating. Yeah. So I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Calling him the closer. It's been a long time since I heard that. So before we get to Mr. Michael Huseman here, the Cup Series will run their second to last race of the chase at Texas this Sunday, November 4th. Then Sunday, November 11th at Phoenix before the Final Four are put in place going into Miami. My favorite track, my first track I ever went to. but yeah, so tell us something about yourself. I know that you got some announcer jobs. I know that you've been in the Air Force. I know you've been, I mean, what makes Mr. Michael Huseman interesting?
Well, yeah, coming up, I think I'm already past it. October of this year would have been is 24 years in the Air Force. And if all goes well here, that'll wrap up on Wednesday. I'm supposed to have my final out. I spent that time being an air traffic controller. So when I decided to move on to radio broadcasting and race announcing, you know, I went up and sat in the booth with a guy here in Mississippi, Magnolia Motor Speedway. You know, he said he was impressed. Most people are a little nervous when they get on the mic. And I said, well, that's something I've been doing for 20-some years already. It's just in a different format. So my first mistake was when I told him, Ross told me to call the cars as they came out onto the backstretch. And I said, well, the first aircraft we have coming out. And I was like, I meant race car. My bad, you know. So there were some good things to it, and there were some bad things to it. But, no, I got into broadcasting. I love it. And I went to the school, the Connecticut School of Broadcasting in Atlanta, and learned so much. You know, now that I'm going to be fully retired from the military, I can actually really start putting that connection and skills to use as I go looking for another full-time job or whatnot. But I also got wrapped up with a street stock. What we call here in the South is what we call the street stocks. With the series with that, became their announcer and kind of a PR guy. PR was not exactly what I wanted to do, but it needed to be done, so I'm doing it. And I hate it at times, but also there's some fun things to it. But yeah, PR job is not for everybody, I'll tell you that.
I suppose. You know, you just like me, you know, as far as broadcasting and whatnot, I'm kind of on the same track as you. I'm just a hobby jock. You know, I'm practicing my craft, and it's gotten a little better because somebody from a local major market sports station that I would call into and blab my mouth all of a sudden told me, you need to get your own outlet. And then all of a sudden I was like, I need to get my own outlet. And while here I stand, you know, ever since April, you know, and grew up on racing and all that stuff. But yeah, no, you got the Magnolia thing going on, but I saw something about, is it Win It? Is it Why Not?
Why not Motorsports Park? Yeah, fortunately, I got a couple of really good tracks around here that have some really big events. Magnolia Motor Speedway is here in Columbus where I live. They host the Lucas Oil Clash at the Mag, which will be back on the schedule next year, mid-June or July, I believe. The World of Outlaws make a two-day stop here at the Why Not Motorsports Park, the House of Hook. That's where I was this past weekend. Columbus Speedway, the Bullring, is Mississippi's oldest dirt track. They've held some historic events and trying to bring that back to its former status, helping out there. And I'm one that, again, I mean, I love racing, and I love all these dirt tracks, and I want to see them all succeed. You know, out there at Columbus, I do announcing, I do video, and I've been the flag man. You know, whatever they need me to do to help out, I'm more than willing. Because, again, like I said, I love dirt track. That's where the grassroots is at. That's what NASCAR is based off of to a degree and where their future is. So want to see it succeed all the way around. So, yeah, I call certain tracks home tracks, but as the hashtag you see, where is MJ now? You never know where I might show up. Looking at a couple different options for this next weekend, Jackson, Mississippi, or North Alabama Speedway in Alabama. So just have to stay tuned and see where I pop up.
You're talking to a guy from Minnesota who can't wait for the monster truck to show up in an enclosed stadium just so I can see some tires spinning. Man, I hate winter. And you're still looking forward to stuff.
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, I had the sweatshirt on. I had the gloves on. It certainly does get a little chilly here. But, yeah, we're not as restricted as you are up there. You know, fortunate to again, be down here and be able to do that. But there are other avenues. Again, as a whole, like you mentioned, monster trucks. I've done some supercross stuff. I had a friend of mine ask me about doing some autocross stuff for them. So I'm pretty much open to anything, and especially, again, if it helps them out, you know, more than willing to help them out.
You know, there is a snowcross, too, that runs at Canterbury Park there in Shakopee, Minnesota. And, you know, I do have some plans for the winter. And for everything else, I just might have to go down to the snowball. And, hey, does Tucson still host the winter heat?
They are, I don't know about winter heat. They got in January coming up the late models. I don't want to say World Outlaw or Lucas Oil because I think that's an open sanction. But you're going to see a lot of the big names of the late models headed out there. It's now called the Wild West Shootout, I believe.
Yeah, I thought there was something about the Slim Jim. You remember the old Slim Jim Pro Series on the, what was that, Northeast?
I do. Yes, I do. That was one of them that, again, some of the names you wouldn't realize where they came from unless you really did some research. But that was a great little touring series that, you know, kind of like the modifieds, the big block modifieds and whatnot out of the Northeast. You know, people don't realize that that's where, you know, Jimmy Spencer and a couple that didn't make it, but the Bodines came from up there. Jimmy Spencer, Ray Everham. You know, just to throw a couple names out there that spent time up there working with the modifieds.
And wasn't there also somebody that we might recognize the last name of, Mike Dillon?
The Dillons also, yes, came through. Yep, you are correct.
So, yeah, I remember Greg Biffle got tapped on the shoulder after Benny Parsons referred him to Jack Roush. After running the Tucson winter race down there, and the rest is history. I'd like to put him back on the track. We're having a conversation, matter of fact, with somebody that's going to be joining us in just a second. The team captain from the Bleachers, Kurt. We were talking about if we won the lottery, I would reopen the state fairgrounds because they're below budget. The race was profiting. And you talked to me briefly, I believe, on Sharon's show about the state fairgrounds in Minnesota? Was it your someone in your family? Was it your dad or
I was down there with it. Yeah, my dad and my cousin, and that was when back we had been. Now I can't think of the name of the series. Let me think for a second.
Well, we had the ASA series, we had the ARCO series.
Thank you. That's,
and we also leading up to that, it was actually the USAC. USAC would run a late model division there as well.
No, it was the ASA series. Daryl Waltrip, Mark Martin, Jimmy Spencer, Kenny Schrader, Johnny
Dick
Benson,
Trickle, Rusty Wallace,
Dick Trickle. There you go. It was an ASA race there that Dale Earnhardt was attending. He had a black number 8, actually, Goodwrench number 8, that we got to meet him. And, you know, you hear different things about different drivers and how they are with fans after a race and whatnot. Earnhardt was standing there talking with fans and people and whatnot. Kevin got a picture of Kevin next to him. But when he said, "Hey, guys, let's go," that car was in the trailer and they were on the road in like 3 minutes. I mean, like I said, he hung out and I don't know what time frame it was. I know, you know what, by the time we got down there, he was still down there and we talked and whatnot. But yeah, when he said, "Let's go," they were gone.
You know, there's a long story behind the Earnhardt appearance at the state fairgrounds too. Neil Larson, he was the promoter that handled everything from the 70s right up until the final race in 2002 when budget concerns and whatnot shut it down. But he was at the Perkins over there by Harriman Hall by the fairgrounds early in the morning. Dick Trickle sitting in a no smoking zone and kept lighting cigarettes. And the waitress asked him to put it out. He's like, "No, it's okay." And Neil Larson kept on just kind of shoving the waitress money. And Rusty Wallace and Dale Earnhardt were there at the same time. And Dick Trickle was playing the instigator saying, "Hey, remember that time when you guys blah, blah, blah," you know, just trying to get him in an argument. I guess it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, which by my standards is like, I'm sleeping another 6 hours at that point. You know, before I got to be to the race at 1 o'clock. So it was just, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, Ken Schrader and all those guys would get appearance fees, and the budget just didn't work anymore. $40,000 in profit for $10 million in improvements. To put it up to spec as far as fire code, by the way, and the ASA series wanted this for a pit road, that for a pit road, this for a higher starter stand and everything else. Do the math. I mean, $40,000 profit a year, driver appearance fees. It wasn't going to happen, and unfortunately, it's just a concert venue now. So we're going to welcome in Kurt, who I'm sure is just boiling with talk about the state fairgrounds.
Well, a little bit about that, but I'm kind of being serious in one way here and kind of not. You being in the military, have you ever, and working for the Air Force, have you ever had a driver ask to look around for jet fuel?
I have not had a match for jet fuel, no.
In any kind of parts.
Welcome to Kurt, Mike.
I just have always wondered, because anytime the racing and the military kind of have a little connection there, it is something, even as a kid, I'd always wondered. And then it got really bad there at Homestead during the Miami 400, right? And in 2009, seeing the flyover And one guy behind me actually brought that up. I'm wondering if there's ever been a driver that's asked the military for little tiny parts that might give them a boost.
You know, I'm going to interrupt you there, Kurt. Mike, we were talking about the demise of Michael Waltrip Racing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how all the cheating that went on at Richmond and whatnot. But do you remember when Michael Waltrip started his team and they found jet fuel in his carburetor?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Huh. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's one that I'm sure there are certain connections. And you gotta remember, a lot of what the military does get is also contracted out. So they don't necessarily have to go to the military to get it, but they can go to the companies that provide the same stuff to the military.
Okay.
You know, and,
okay.
Now, like with that, for example, with that jet fuel, if that's, and I don't know if it was ever proven or declared that's what it was, you know, it's kind of the assumption that that's what that was that created that gel in it, and that's how they figure that's what it was. I don't remember. I remember the situation. Like I said, I don't know if it was ever officially declared what the illegal additive was, but yeah, that is something that he wouldn't necessarily have to get from the military itself, but from a similar type supplier.
Okay, yeah, because you know, even after that, talking to my friend Brad, though, bring up what the guy said too. Even Brad goes, well, I'm wondering if you could ever make an invisible car like a stealth fighter or stealth bomber. If that would be, and we're just joking around about all that stuff that night, but yeah, I would have never even thought about that, but I just had to, you know, and I'm sure you probably couldn't just go and ask them for it either. but
most certainly not. Again, anything like that has to be channelized through proper, proper procedure and whatnot. And again, you get into a lot of different investigations then as to why you want it, know what your use is, and yeah, probably
oh,
worth
man.
The hassle.
Yeah, and just before you came on, I was looking at Haley Deegan, and I hope I'm saying her name right, and I do hope everything works out good for her. Keep on giving her that press, because I think we got a star in the making. I want to make that clear. I've been meaning to say that every single show. Just keep on giving her press, people. Please do.
You know, it's funny you bring up somebody from the K&N series, and I've been thinking recently that the K&N series is actually looking more like the truck series of old. And
good point.
They look like they're beating and banging short track style, like what we used to have out of the truck series. And now the truck series is on a bigger truck or tracks. But yeah, truck series returned after a weekend off when they came to Martinsville. I got to say my highlight was the Cousins Burton getting back on the track together. I know that's a little subject, but to see Harrison and Jeb doing a little beating and banging and battling brought me back to Jeff, and who is Harrison's dad, and Jeb
Ward.
I meant to say Jeb Ward's son, but yeah, you got that right. It made me pay attention in a different way because I was watching the race and keeping track of where Jeff was and where Harrison was. It was just cool to see them on the track together. But just like the Cup Series, this is also the first of the final three races before Miami for the championship, where obviously Johnny Sauter He's one of our hometown boys. Did you ever get to see Jim Sauter or the oldest of the sons up here, Jay?
Yeah, I have seen them run, and I know they've had a couple of races where they all three. I'd never seen Jim run, but I had seen Tim and Johnny run together. I know that I think it was the Slinger Nationals, maybe, where they all three made it into the show and got to run together.
Yeah, Slingerland was one of the mainstays in the weekly. What was it, Checkered Flag Racing News or whatever I used to get as a kid. And, you know, you'd have, you know, the big dogs, Jim and Dick Trickle and Tom Reffner, and, you know, the whole Super American Knights. You remember them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were a pretty big deal to me growing up. But, yeah, to see Johnny doing so good is just – he's the closest thing I have to a hometown boy now that Matt Kenseth isn't really the mainstay. He's got that cool little museum there in Cambridge, Wisconsin, only 3 hours away from me, though. It's pretty cool.
I've never been through that. Hopefully one day here and now being retired, you know, maybe have a little more opportunity to do something like that. But I've never had the opportunity to go through that.
So you've been covering a lot of K&M West from or following it as far as the Fanfor show.
Getting hooked up with Sharon and covering that, and I'd kind of gone away from it. I spent 4 years in Japan, so it was tough to even come up with or follow NASCAR at its top three levels, let alone some of these lower series. But yeah, the fact that, again, like you said, the K&N, and it was the East race I went to because they were here in Memphis, and then again this year I wasn't able to go. Sharon, I know, went to Iowa where they had the joint event. We were supposed to go to Gateway. So I think it's a good thing, again, that they get more coverage, because that's where, like Kurt just mentioned, your next stars are going to come from. You know, Kaylee Deegan coming from the West. Ron Hornaday, Kevin Harvick came from the K&N West.
Yep.
You know, so I think they need to get that coverage. So fans that are, say, NASCAR Cup Series fans, when these guys come in, and I talked to my mom about this too, because she's gotten better with watching trucks in the Xfinity. But when we talk K&N series or even ARCA series, you know, she's a little bit lost. And I said, that's why some of these guys and girls come in and already have that huge fan base built. They're just bringing in addition to then building on at the national level.
Now, is it the K&N series, as far as that side of the tracks go, isn't that the Winston West and they used to have the Bush North and...
It has gone through some changes, yes.
So they finally tied the K&N East and the K&N West. We even had a East West deal at Elko. Have you been there since they revamped that track?
I have not. That was, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago? That was actually where they held the joint K&N East and West event. And I remember,
yes,
I can't remember what came up that I didn't get to go, but I really wanted to, because at that time is when Jeffrey Earnhardt was driving a Junior Motorsports DEI backed car. And so, yeah, I was really looking forward to that. But again, something came up. I don't remember if I was deployed or what, but I wasn't able to go.
Yeah, that's it. That track is pretty premier for third mile. It, I mean, you got skyboxes. You got now the pits are paved. Now the parking lot is paved. Now it's, I mean, the drivers are calling it Garage Mahal. Unfortunately, the weekly racing series has died off and has become a stunt show. Hopefully, somebody steps in and changes that. but it's what it is.
Elko,
well, I hate to.
Elko is a great Saturday night track. It just always has been.
Yeah, most certainly. I know, and we went through that, if you're familiar with I-94 Speedway, you know, that went dirt, then asphalt, then back to dirt, and eventually went away there at Sauk Center, Minnesota.
Yep.
That was one where I spent my Friday, Saturday nights at.
Yeah, I would great. Always... Yep. Sorry.
That was a great track because if you were just your local bomber driver, you could leave it in the pits. Didn't have to haul it back and forth. Just do your thing, you know. And that track was pretty high bank when they paved it.
It was, but, and again, obviously it didn't work. I think the owner there was one that was looking to try and do everything because he actually had two dirt tracks. The one there and the one now is I-94 is actually in Fergus Falls. But tried to do one as dirt and one as asphalt, and it just didn't work. I mean, I can't answer why. I'm not real sure, but it never materialized.
Yeah, that's a shame because it was just someplace, you know, take your kids, get them inspired, maybe get them into auto racing, that kind of thing, just like me as a little knee-high. So, how are we doing for time, Mike?
I do need to get off of here. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully I can do it again sometime, but... yeah, I got to grab something to eat here before I do my next one.
All right. I won't be on, but I'll be listening. Before you go, wanted to ask you, do you think that the driver's responsibility to bring sponsorship is too much instead of the owner looking for the driver for a sponsor?
That's a really hard one to answer. You know, unfortunately, it used to be that, yeah, if you had the talent, somebody would find you a sponsor, whether it be, you know, the owner or the company itself just said, hey, I see you. I want to be with you. You know, nowadays, they talk about it, you know, again, we all watch NASCAR at that level, but it's no different down here at the dirt track home team. You know, there's guys that are spending $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 on a street stock car now. And yeah, the sponsors aren't just coming to them. So yeah, you got to be out there, you know, promoting yourself, highlighting what you've done, what you've accomplished, where you intend on running. You know, it used to again be if you know your local companies that would help you out. Well, for example, here in Columbus, we got two different tracks, six different classes. This town can only support so many, you know what I mean? So you got to be able to sell yourself and get sponsors from local, you know, towns that are 15, 20 miles away, you know, that some of the fans would still be familiar with and be able to relate to and visit. But yet you're also then, like you said, it kind of expanding your range. Just because you've got so many that are competing for those sponsorship dollars within a town. But as far as responsibility, I guess, you know, it's one of those of you can put it as whoever you want. You got to have it. You know, if the driver can bring it in and say, hey, I got a sponsor, here we go, great. If the owner says, hey, I got a sponsor, we need a driver, now you can do a strictly talent search, even better. But it's just a mix of right now. You know, again, it don't matter how it gets done. It's just got to get done.
Now, do you think that if you got the mediocre driver, where do you finally let that driver go if he's providing money?
And this is one, again, as a fan – coming from that perspective, I don't like to see it. But I also haven't, you know, run the series and working with some of these drivers that I know that are in this bind, it's also a matter of you have to have the money first no matter what. So it might put you in that kind of a bind where if that's the one that's bringing in the money, you don't have a whole lot of choice, you know.
All right, I'm going to let you go in a second here. And upon this note, I had 5 laps to go in victory lane, but I'm going to go 3 to go right in between. Instead of asking who your pick is for the championship, how many of the 4 Stewart Haas cars do you predict will be in the finale and who?
Like I said, I think we're looking at one almost definite in Kevin Harvick. If I were gambling and putting money on it, I'd have to say one and only one, and that being Kevin Harvick. But I do think it's possible, and I hate to leave Clint Bowyer out because I like him, but I think with the 2 tracks coming up, I think it's Kurt Busch or Eric Almirola, and I'd lean heavier on Kurt just based on experience and whatnot. But Eric has showed this year, you know, he can run right up there with these guys when they all got the same equipment and whatnot. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Eric or Kurt race their way into one of those spots. But like I said, if I were a gambling man and just putting money on it, I'd say one and only, and that would be Kevin Harvick.
You know, Eric's been full of surprises. And like I said, no slam on Danica, but he's done something with that team that he couldn't do, so I'm happy for her. Hey, Jay, Michael, or Hughesman, I'll be tuning in, and if for some reason you guys get bored, just give me a shout, and I will call in.
All right, well, I think tonight we got a pretty, I think it's one hot topic pretty much, obviously, with what happened. I know you've listened before, you know Sharon's side of it already, so kind of just anticipating when she gets to let loose and let that out. But
I will be tuning in. I'll probably be having a greasy microwave cheeseburger dripping up my chin, and I hope that me and Kurt have been a little more politically correct tonight than we usually are.
Oh, that doesn't bother me. Like I said, I mean, that's one of those, you know, every program's a little bit different. I got no problem with any of it. I enjoy talking racing. So again, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah.
Every once in a while we go PC on it.
I got to admit, one thing, being here in Minnesota, October, it's actually been a really cold October. And if it was warmer, we might be different when you mentioned the South. I'll let you know. And one thing real quick here. God, I hope you got time. You don't have to give a long answer, but one thing, have you noticed, is there just a different driving style in the South because of the weather compared to the Midwest?
There definitely is.
Okay.
There definitely is, and part of it is the type of track and the type of dirt that's used for one. And then again, how you think about how it settles, you know, during the day and whatnot. Same as up there, you know, the winter months, especially on say your asphalt tracks, how the winter months take a tougher toll on it than it does down here. Well, that's no different for dirt tracks. The moisture, again, the humidity here. The moisture, even during the summer months, you know, the track's going to react a whole lot different. And it's funny that you say that, because we have a group that when we have bigger races that I've gotten to know several that come up out of Florida from the East Bay and Volusia County area, you know, that they talk about even from Florida to here how much different it is. So.
Oh, God. And no, I kind of brought that up because we got a big time softball tournament here, and even those guys go, look, we can play year round. And even when those guys, I've always wanted to ask about racing, and I never would just think about the track. I would always just think about, well, does a driver have more time just to play around with the car on a track, but just the actual condition of the track? I would have never thought about it. Cool.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge part. Like I said, I mean, you know, and that here, as Mississippi is one of those states where they say, you know, if you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes. So even on a given weekend, you know, if you got a two-day show, you could run on two entirely different tracks.
Oh, wow. Huh. That would be interesting.
My favorite place in the world is Miami, and I say that about any vacation, any visit to Homestead. And it's hard to believe that there are actual full weekend rain at Daytona, like, what moved the Juan Montoya blow up the air dryer. where it rained all weekend and they had to move it to Monday primetime. But, all right. So, buddy, I'm going to let you go there. And me and Kurt are going to talk some multi-sports and, you know, give my voice a break. Jesus. So...
I greatly appreciate the opportunity. You guys have a great rest of the show, and hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Yeah, thank you.
We're normally not this right. well behaved.
Well, like I told you, man, you know, even based on my name, you know, I'm the same way. You know, how I behave when I'm at a higher level event versus my local home track. Sometimes I raise a little bit more hell, if you will, when I'm right here at home.
Nice. All right. I'll be tuning in about an hour to you guys.
Great.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, he's off. That was Michael J. Huseman or Michael Huseman or J. Michael Huseman. I don't even know who he is. I just knew he grew up in Cross Lake, Minnesota.
Never would have thought of that, though, about the actual conditions of the tracks. And, like, where he just mentioned that you could be on two different tracks the same weekend, two totally different conditions. And then it just kind of reminded me, Mississippi, I'm wondering if one part of the state's getting hit by a hurricane, and then the next part, it's only like 30-some degrees. I've always wondered that, if that's ever happened. There's that little part of it that's right there on the Gulf.
Oh, they talk about dragsters and everything and the difference in the elevation versus sea level and everything like that. When you talk about the tackiness of clay tracks and the dust and, yeah, it's a... A lot of different animals that play into dirt racing there, too. So, anyways, NHRA, Top Fuel, Steve Torrens took Vegas, Tony Carr, went to J.R. Todd, Pro Stock, went to Bo Butner, Hector Ronan Jr., went to Pro Bike. Now, here's the long version of it. NHRA hit the Vegas Strip for their second to last event of the season. And right now, Steve Torrens, he has the rap on Top Fuel. Nobody's going to be able to approach him. Brittany Force took it last year due to Steve Torrance's injuries. Now, the most points a driver can gain is 191. And Torrance is 232 ahead of second place going into Pomona. There are the other four of the top five that can shuffle the deck, but they are separated widely. They really are. Antron Brown in sixth, couldn't move any further up than third place. So, and the Cards would have to fall to his advantage. Funny car, J.R. Todd leads Tommy Johnson by exactly 191 points, the most possible points. Tommy Johnson is fifth. J.R. Todd would have to skip Pomona for Tommy Johnson to even have a chance. Mathematically eliminated is Courtney Forrest in sixth. Sox, who had all but clinched before the showdown when they shuffled the points back up into the playoff scenario. I don't agree with the playoff stuff that's going on, be it NASCAR, be it, you know, there's a good reason that Formula One, you go, you don't suddenly say, okay, that's nice. You ran 10 races. You got two races and you're all set back to zero. But yeah, J.R. Todd leads Robert Hight by 74 points, obviously within the 191. Ron Capps by 165 points. Not likely for Capps. Not much hope for the two of them being in contention. Pro Stock, Tanner Gray, has been the man, as you know. Jags Kaufman Jr. and Eric Anders are 140 and 149 out in second and third. Good luck making up those 191. So I think that Tanner Gray's going to have the lock. Pro Bike, though, on the other hand, this is the tightest division with Matt Smith leading, Eddie Krawczyk in second, Tongwit in third, and Hector Ronan Jr. and Jerry Savoy. And, by the way, the sixth place runner, Andrew Hines. They're separated by 113. Six drivers separated by 113. That's a lot less than 191 separating Steve Torrence from second place. NHRA will head to Pomona November 8th to the 11th for their finals. Remember that 191 points possibility for any driver to gain on anyone. By the way, John Force is still chasing that 150th win in the final. I'm sure he doesn't care about points. He wants that 150th win.
Kind of funny you mentioned John Force, and then the cat here just loves this cardboard. And I've noticed anytime you mention John Force, this cat here will suddenly get a little playful. So I think she's a big John Force fan. Kind of funny. So, John, you got another fan out there.
She's not as pretty as his daughters. I'm going to take a break.
You know, it's just kind of funny that I just noticed that again. She'll do that sometimes when John Force gets mentioned.
Right. I got to take a break. I got to hit the Gatorade. And then we'll be right back and we'll talk some multi-sports. We'll be right back.
Yeah, they're bringing in the Commissioner's Cup from Dodger Stadium to the Fenway area once again.
Do you think they have to actually make a suit for it?
Well, they're going to have to start because you remember how long it took them to get rid of that damn curse. And 2004, when they beat the Cardinals in the World Series, and they beat the Rockies, and then so forth. We're around to see the Red Sox win four World Series titles. And I'm not bored of them yet. And this, some people are asking, is this the greatest team ever? Because of their win total.
I'm thinking that they hire a private jet, unlike the Bud Ice Penguin that sold the Stanley Cup and put that fucker in coach. Oh, I just said the F word. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, even think about it 2 years ago. We got to live to see the Cubs win a world title. Oh, God, what is it? For some reason, I am just so damn hungry. I just think it would be so cool to see late October baseball at Target Field. Probably couldn't go, but I mean, could you imagine here? We might even have to worry about a snow out possibly in late October because of the Twins. Oh.
You know, can you imagine being Tommy Lasorda? And he just would just be like,
that might be Magic Johnson for the second year in a row. You know, he's one of the owners of the Dodgers. You know, he's did that 2 years in the world, although the guy's put together a great team.
You know, I am not a stick and ball sport broadcaster, and this is a racing show, but I got to say, between the 18-inning game and everything else, how can you not be interested? That was fun.
It was, and they brought in Kershaw to pinch hit. They brought in the greatest pitcher of our era. I know there's probably people that would disagree with me there, but I'd like that when that happens in baseball. They'll have to bring out a starting pitcher to pinch hit. I love seeing that. Not to mention the greatest pitcher right now, too.
Yeah, that's definitely a wild scenario going through all that. And then to have the error that made it 1-0 and then back it up with a 3-run homer, and then Boston backs it up with a 3-run homer, and then this was not boring.
No, it wasn't. And I mean, I just thought the Red Sox, I did not see them winning 4-1 exactly after Friday night too. I just thought, you know, a little bit of this momentum's going to change. And then I just thought, because of all the people they had to use, are they going to be worn out? And then last night they definitely, it's kind of like, well, they got a couple more hours of sleep and let's just take this thing now. I mean, no, and God, I did not see them being this dominating. but they were.
So, I would bring up NFL. I'm not going to. Do not talk about them. This is just stupid. And
still love Adam Thielen, though. I still love the guy. I won't deny that.
Hey, yeah. Well, I was going to say how they had the rematch of the tie between the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Pittsburgh won.
But that somebody got fired.
And that was what finally, put the end to the Cleveland Browns losing streak. And by the way, who got fired? Who got fired? Fire.
Yep. Yep. The Cleveland Browns lost another family member today. And, oh, God, I forgot. The coach's name isn't slipping my mind, but he got fired.
Huh.
You know.
Remember our first show? Was it our first show? We were talking about the Cleveland Browns.
Was at the beginning of the season. Now.
Wasn't that the beginning of Speedway Anywhere?
Actually, I thought Speedway Anywhere began in April, just after our last blizzard.
When I was stuck here. Yeah, that was a mess. I thought our first show had something to do with Baker Mayfield going in the first draft and my phone ringing and you saying that that's probably Mayfield. And I said, Jeremy Mayfield? All right, people go back through the podcast to the first show of Speedway Anywhere. And you tell me. That was awesome. Hey, remember that time when we talked about Baker Mayfield and Jeremy Mayfield? That was cool.
So remember the time?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, remember the time he made fun of your haircut? Like a, you know.
Like a butt.
Like a butt, yes. Like a butt.
All right. What else is going on in multi-sports besides the championship of the Major League Baseball and no mention of the Vikings?
Well, I heard a little something about Jimmy Butler on how it's being said that Houston, the Rockets offered them four first round draft picks for Jimmy Buckets. You know, and I don't know. I don't know. I just say get the guy out of here if you want to. Keep him around if you want to.
Here I go. I'm talking about Bo Butner being the winner in pro stock for the first time in a godzillion years, and you're talking about butt head looking like a butt. Now
yep.
You got Butler and, can we just get off the butt?
By the way, in these racing teams, have they ever traded with each other? Drivers? Never heard of anything like that.
Not officially. But I had a feeling. I was talking with Michael Huseman earlier about, you know, how some guys bring money to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Paul Menard. Do you think he ever would have reached the cup level if it wasn't for Daddy?
Yeah. I'm going to say no. And now the guy can do something I clearly can't. I'm almost wondering, with a guy like Paul Menard, did it help him more to have that kind of backing when he was first starting. That's where, I'm going to bring up a guy like Kyle Busch. I'm wondering if, because of his dad, if it helped him more at the beginning.
You're talking about homegrown stuff, though. I'm talking about massive league, not major league, massive league.
What?
And now Menards is on the side of Ryan Blaney's car.
Yeah.
And Paul Menard is now driving for the Wood Brothers in the 21 without the Menard name on the side. So,
Could you imagine, though?
You know that?
Could you imagine what the news would be like for racing people if the Wood Brothers won a cup again? Oh, man, it would be like. It would be like the Cubs in 2016. They hadn't did it forever. Even if one of their drivers won a race again, it would be major.
I got to wrap this to a certain extent, not like in a hurry. But, Guinness Records. You become the ultimate fuel can member of the world. Guinness World Records. I went looking for his name, can't find it. I know that he's a pit crew member of Chase Elliott. Somewhere in New York, he fueled 140 cars in 1 hour. Imagine picking up that many frickin' fuel cans, 22 times 140 gallons of gas. And making sure you don't 1 ounce.
Oh.
I mean, that's just badass.
Oh.
I don't even think it was the actual fuel man. I think it was like a tire carrier or a jackman.
Oh, God. You know what?
I'm just making this up at this point. I really am. But I couldn't find his name. Because when you go to search freaking Guinness World Records and all that stuff. I mean, all they want to do is show you somebody's freaking the length of their toenail or something stupid like that. So I didn't have time. I will figure it out in the next show. World of Outlaws. World of Outlaws goes to Charlotte. You know, the outside bowl ring. Outside college on Thursday, November 1st, with Donnie Schatz, the guy we made fun of all year. Thank you, Donnie Schatz. It's like, you're a real American hero. Thank you, Donnie Schatz, for having such a weird last name that we can say Schatz.
Yep.
And not be sponsored by Budweiser. What's up with that?
Yeah, I know.
It's been Donnie Schatz, Brad Sweet, David Gravel going throughout the year. They will finish up their season this weekend, Thursday, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. I'm going to get bored because I can't come up with new topics about Donnie's chart. The Schwartz.
Yeah. Man, may Schwartz be with him.
Till 2019.
Yep. Oh, could I know you're not doing great for time, but one thing about that, about those fuel cans, I'm wondering if his family's trying to get all of them into one shadow box for him, put it out there in the living room.
Is what it is.
Yep.
All right. Arca, as mentioned, was decided at Kansas by Sheldon Creed, taking the green. Creed will be running three more races in the truck series. He started one last weekend at Martinsville. He ran at Martinsville in the truck series. And on a recent radio show, by the way, blogtalkradio.com/fan4, racing. He was saying Martinsville might be his biggest challenge. He finished 19th, but says he feels confidence in Texas, Phoenix, and Miami. Robbie Gordon Truck Series. The Super Stadium Trucks. Sheldon Creed also has been running there. So, but yeah, I'm pretty much at a wrap here. I didn't hear who your pick of the four Stewart cars do you think will be in, or will there be more than one?
I'm going to go with Harvick.
Only Harvick?
Harvick, and yeah, I got to admit, I do root for him, too. I mean, you know, it's just an energy level or something there. Yeah, I'm going to go Harvick's definitely there.
Well, he's the only one that's on the end of the four Stewart drivers right now.
Yep.
Even though Kurt Busch was top finisher at Martinsville for Stewart. All right.
Yep, we had a fun show, and you got to look more into that world record, because when I heard that, I'm just going, there is something I would not have even thought about, but that would be a nice little skill level to have. And I'm just thinking, man, I'm wondering how many people want him to open up his own full service station.
You know, I was thinking earlier too, as far as, okay, what kind of records could we achieve on a Guinness World Records page? There's got to be something I'm good at. I mean, picking my nose. I mean, who can produce the most? Like I said, I was going to save the politically incorrect. But yeah. What do you do with that? Do you like see how many times you can tap your foot to the little Jimmy Dickens song and then double it? And then, I mean, I'm just coming up with stuff off the cuff. Like, look at, I have an antenna that barely works for the TV I have. How many times can I wave the two sides of it back and forth and create a record of in 1 minute? How much trash can I pile up as a hoarder?
One of the things about setting a world record, I've always thought about, you know, when you're part of these world record breaking group things, you know, I wonder how you proved that you were a part of it to other people. Because, you know, let's just say you were part of the world's biggest circle jerk. I'm sorry, that's the only thing I can come to my mind right now. How do you prove that?
Michael J. Huseman, if you're still listening, I apologize. But please realize we saved the worst for last.
You know, reminds me of that Vanessa Williams song, Saving the Best for Last. As when I'm like 19, a friend of mine, that was the theme of the prom at Roosevelt High School. And he just said, that prom turned out to be saving the worst for last.
You know, I'm going to stop you. I'm starting to think. You know, I lost my train of thought. And it was not marijuana involved.
Didn't think it would be.
I wish it was. But yeah, as you go through a show and you invite somebody on and you spend your whole day designing facts on a Word document that doubles as a teleprompter, you try to create this intelligent show. But when you wonder how many freaking people are listening and you don't know until the following day or the following week, does it even count? So anyways, hey, we're going to wrap and we're not going to do it like a certain local major market radio station. I don't have a producer that can create a rap, or do I? You got a rap for tonight?
Well,
that's
actually
no.
I think we had a good little show, and yeah, no, I didn't think it was a bad show at all.
Yeah, Mike's got that radio voice. He announces that races.
He
cuts across.
He does, and plus he knows his stuff. And
so, speaking of which, I'm going to take myself a quick little cracker break. Not because I'm a rapper or a cracker, but I'm going to have some cheese and crackers, and then I'm going to tune in to the blogtalkradio.com/fan4reason. Fan 4, number 4. F-A-N 4, Reason. And on blogtalkradio.com. And see what they got going on. You can hear more Michael J. Huseman over there. And I think I'm going to take the night off from that show and just listen. Because I'm hungry. I want some crackers.